All right, hello golfers. Welcome to the On Par Winner Podcast. Pleased to be joined by Kieran Clark, the golf writer at golfshake.com. Kieran, how you doing?
I'm very good, Anthony. Thanks for having me on. And I'm looking forward to these podcasts because, you know, I think our two contrasting accents will blend together beautifully, I think.
I think you're right. Although my accent is a little muted, being that I'm a little under the weather at the moment, but as you know, the show must go on, my friend.
And so, absolutely.
We'll just have to suck it up and do what we can. But I'm looking forward to this podcast as well. I think it's like you said, it's fun to have opposing views from people on different sides of the water hazard, if you will. And I you're a person who I respect in the golf community, and although we probably do agree on a lot of stuff, it's just fun to get a different perspective on varying topics.
Well, I don't know, Anthony, because I'm perfectly willing to disagree with you if I have to, so we'll wait and see.
Well, I'm sure you will be willing to, and I look forward to those very much. But being from New York, I'm not. It's not unique to have someone who disagrees or arguing seems to be part of a personal trait on this side.
Less so over here, thankfully. People like me in Perthshire, we're much more sedate and very placid compared to the New Yorkers.
Yeah, we tend to be a little bit of the aggressive side, but. Enough of that.
Well, I feel safe over here, so I'm a good few thousand miles away from you, so I feel perfectly safe where I am.
I'm sure you are. Although, well, we won't even go there. let's start with the passing of Christy O'Connor. I hate to start on such a downer note, but it did happen recently. We heard today, and I thought maybe you'd just give us a little perspective on Christy O'Connor Jr., most famous for his two iron at the 1989 Ryder Cup at the Belfry, but he's not a, when you look at his record, not an illustrious career, but an indelible figure, especially on your side of the pond. Maybe give us a little perspective on him.
Yeah, you know, very tragic news. You know, Christy O'Connor Jr., who passed away just age 67, so very suddenly in Spain earlier today, and it's a sad loss, and I'd never had any personal deals with him or even encountered him, but I only heard good things about him as a man, a gentleman, a fine character. And you know, that shot in 89 at the Belfry in the Ryder Cup was against Fred Couples, a very young Fred Couples in the singles in the final day, and that really intimidating approach shot to the last hole there at the Brabazon course, and the two-iron, two irons don't even exist anymore, it seems, and he hit the most brilliantly struck shot to within 4 feet and hold the putt and won the match, which led to Europe ultimately tying that Ryder Cup and then retaining the trophy they had won 4 years previously, and again 2 years prior to that as well. So they had almost had three in a row where they retained the Ryder Cup. A massive change in the shift of power within that competition, of course. But Christy O'Connor, his uncle, of course, is also Christy O'Connor, famously finished second in the Open Championship, I think, in 1965. And he followed his uncle's footsteps into professional golf. He won four times on the European Tour, a number of other events around the UK and Europe, and he later won a number of times on the Champions Tour in America and also in the Senior Tour over here. So he was a fine player for many, many years. He also was heavily involved in the golf design industry, particularly in Ireland. He was involved in a lot of different golf courses there. He was very good at that, and just a very popular guy. And certainly you hear all the tributes that have come through from today and from all kinds of people, and they're certainly heartfelt and warm. And that's sort of the reaction he inspired. And you know, that shot in 89, though, that's what he will be remembered for. And when you create a moment like that, where it's one of those indelible moments, shots in Ryder Cup history, you know, in 50 years' time, if it's, you know, well, it's on TV or whatever they call TV then, the Ryder Cup's still on, when they show the highlights and the greatest moments from the past, that shot will still feature prominently because it was an unbelievable moment. And the shot was fantastic, but also the scenes, the crowds around the green, the atmosphere, the sun was shining. And his reaction actually after beating Fred Couples there was so gracious. He went straight to Fred Couples and you know, shook his hand warmly and then stood there and just took in the whole atmosphere around him. It was if you go into YouTube, you can watch it back. The clips have been going around social media, of course, today, and it's a fantastic moment to watch. And he will be remembered for that. He created an indelible moment in Ryder Cup history. And I guess, as I say in life, if you're if you're remembered in life, you've achieved something, and he certainly is. And it's a sad loss, and we certainly pass on our best wishes and condolences to his friends and family at this moment.
Yeah, I saw you post that at the on the Golf Shake Twitter account, and yeah, just a fantastic shot. I actually saw. It's funny. I also saw a friend of ours, or I should say, a Twitter friend of ours, more a friend of yours, Stuart. Stuart Armstrong.
Yep.
He posted his recreation, which was not exactly
yes, I saw that. Yeah.
Not exactly up to Christie's O'Connor's
standards. Not quite. No.
and it's a sad loss for the world of golf, and I think it's certainly so sad that he actually passes before. Not that I you know, if you understand what I'm saying, he passes before his father does, who still no parent should outlive their children, I think, especially, and you know, if, when you have children, that sentiment. Was he a, would you say more, how do I put this, more of a paved the way for people like Padraig Harrington and maybe some of the younger Irish figures in the game?
Yeah, well I know that people like Harrington and Paul McGinley, those guys, they certainly looked up to Christy O'Connor as being that figurehead in the game, because really there weren't too many great Irish players for a long time. You had him, you had Eamon Darcy, players like that in that era. And growing up, you know, people like Harrington and McGinley at that age would have been looking up to Christy O'Connor Jr. in the 70s and 80s as being really the best Irish player in the game. And so, yeah, I'm sure it's a loss certainly felt within Ireland and people involved in the golfing scene there. But also the wider context as well, because he was a very popular individual all across Europe and on the tour. The players that he'd encountered in the past, they all got on with him, media people, even just regular fans who encountered him in more recent years at kind of charity events and so on. You know, they all had a good word to say about him. So, you know, it's a sad loss. You know, as you say, he's predeceased his uncle, Christy O'Connor, who is 91 years old, I believe. So
right.
It's a sad loss for that family. You know, and nowadays, 67 is not an old man anymore. You know, he's still an extremely young man who could have had many more years ahead of him. And to have died so suddenly, so abruptly, is so particularly tragic. But certainly, as I say, he has a huge legacy. For a player who, you said earlier on, he didn't have the most glittering of playing records, but certainly a very good one. To be on a Ryder Cup team, two Ryder Cup teams in 75 and 89, that takes some doing even back then. And he finished third in the Open Championship at Royal St. George's in 85, where Sandy Lyle won. So he was a very accomplished player. A very talented player, a very kind of naturally gifted player. Maybe didn't quite fulfill that talent, I guess you could probably argue, but certainly, you know, he had his moment in the game in 89 at the Belfry. And he'll be remembered for that from us as fans, as people who watch the game and follow it, will remember that moment. But also the people within the game in Ireland and in Europe, they will remember the man, Christy O'Connor Jr., who was certainly universally loved.
Sure. Let's turn our from your side of the water hazard to mine and just turn our attention to the PGA Tour. Believe it or not, it's sort of a, if you can wrap your brain around it, the sort of Kapalua kicks off on this side of, I guess you could say, the new year, yet we're seven events into the so-called season. It's sort of a little bit of a conundrum, but
yeah.
Before we get to this upcoming season and Kapalua per se, but you know, just a quick thoughts on last year, if you will, or I guess you could call it the 2014-15 wraparound season. I don't know what you call it, but let's say the season prior to the seven events that already started in 2015. what stands back at you as you reflect the couple of the highlights that stand out to you?
Well, it has to be Jordan Spieth as the main highlight. You know, what he achieved last year was remarkable. He went from being essentially a really talented and kind of potential-filled rookie young player. He transformed himself into being a golfing superstar on a Masters of Weeks. You know, to win, to dominate at Augusta National like he did at the Masters, becoming the second youngest winner of all time there, it was incredible. Then he carried it on, and he won on a completely different golf course at Chambers Bay, a course that was uncooperative, it was cartoonish. I've kind of said before, I think Quentin Tarantino could have designed it. It was something else.
Yep.
But he still managed to grind out a win there.
Sure.
And that was equally impressive. To win two majors at that age, you know, was incredible, and it placed him on the precipice of potentially having a charge towards history. And of course, he went to the old course of St. Andrews with the expectations all around that he win three consecutive majors. Could he somehow get one step closer to completing the elusive career season-long Grand Slam? And of course, St. Andrews, you know, even though he didn't win, to me it was just as remarkable, because he made us believe when he held that long putt, if you remember, on the 16th green of the old course in the Monday finish, when the crowds there who got in for a cheap price, they were electrified by that. And for those moments, as he walked off the 16th green celebrating, standing on the 17th tee, we all believed that the impossible, or the improbable at least, was going to happen.
Yep.
And that was an incredible gift that really we hadn't had in the game since Tiger, you know, back in 2000, 2001, when he was doing what he was doing there. We hadn't really had that since then. It was incredible to follow.
And
of course, he came up short in the end, missed the putt on the 17th, had the poor wedge shot on the 18th, but he shook off that disappointment and went to the PGA, and he finished second there. You know, it's astonishing. And in the end, you know, if you add up the shots at the end of the season, in the four majors, Jordan Spieth was literally four shots away from potentially winning the Grand Slam. And that's something that I don't think any of us really expected to see to happen again, and not since Tiger. And it was extraordinary. And then, of course, he had a bit of a shaky spell in the late summer, in August and September, but he bounced back, of course, to win the $10 million prize at the FedEx Cup and the Tour Championship. And really, it shook away Jason Day, who had a great run as well, of course, winning the PGA, again, also finishing close at the Open Championship, and then winning those playoff events and the Canadian Open as well. Yep. So those two players, you know, really set themselves apart from the rest on the PGA Tour last year, and from world golf as a whole. Two young guys, and it really was kind of it's been coming for a few years, but it was almost a sense of a changing of the guard. You know, the era of Tiger and Phil and Ernie and Jim Furyk and those kind of guys really has now passed.
Yep.
And now we're seeing Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, Rory McIlroy, of course, is now almost the established guy, despite only being 26.
Yeah.
And behind him, you've got all these other young players, you know, Ricky Fowler and Justin Thomas and Brooks Koepka. They're all there. And they're all gunning now to take the mantle left now by the likes of Tiger and Phil, who are no longer dominant players. That's not to say they can't come back and do something, but in the end, consistently now, we're in a new era. And that's exciting for us going forward. But for last season, Jordan Spieth was remarkable. It was an astonishing season, one of the all-time great seasons that will be remembered for decades to come. But it's funny at the same time, I mean, Jason Day wasn't far behind, but Jordan Spieth is only 22 years old, and he's already had a career, a season, really, that for most players, even the most ambitious of players, would be defined as being a career season.
Yeah.
You know, winning two majors and almost winning a couple of others and FedEx Cup, he's done. You know, what is there left to do? How do you follow that? And that is going to be one of the most compelling issues and questions going into this season. And, of course, Spieth is playing this week at Kapalua, so wait and see how he gets started. But it's going to be really fascinating to see how Jordan Spieth carries the expectations, the weight on his shoulders from not just the fans and the media, but from himself. He set such high standards now, and how can he replicate it? Can he get anywhere near it? Who knows? And it's going to be really fascinating to find out. But last year certainly was the year of Jordan Spieth, and it was something special to watch.
Yeah, without question, and I agree with you on all points. And but to me, the magic of Jordan Spieth is just what the things that are the intangibles, the things that you can't see, and the stuff that he is that makes him up, and the mental toughness, and like you said, the mental fortitude, and to be able, just emotionally what majors do to you.
Well, I think also what we're seeing with Jordan Spieth is during the season, of course, he played a very busy schedule, and I think in a way, when you're a player in that situation, when you're in the bubble, if you like, of playing in tournaments and traveling on planes and hotels and so on, and press conferences, you're not really living in reality. So when you're doing remarkable things like he was, you're almost not, it's not real to you because you're just doing it. You're caught up in the moment the whole time. But now he's had 3-4 weeks now over Christmas and the New Year to sit back and really have his first chance to actually reflect on what happened. And of course, we had that tweet he put out the other day saying, "I really hope this year doesn't come to an end." He was sad that 2015 was over. And I think he has had time now to reflect on what he achieved. And that will be a test of his mental toughness. And he has got a remarkable psychology. And again, that's something you say, an intangible. There's no evidence to say who's stronger mentally than others. But he certainly has seems to have an ability to grind out results on the golf course. That's a real talent to have. You can't buy that. You can't really even train that. It's one of those things that your personality, something that you have there at your disposal.
Yeah.
And he was able to shake off disappointment in the past as well. And even, in fact, going back further, you can go back and say, well, he might have been disappointed after finishing second to Bubba at Augusta in 2014. Really, perhaps he should have won that. He was ahead after nine holes, of course, and then he fell back in the back nine. But he recovered from that to come back and win it the following year. So he has shown time and time again that he has got a real sense of a resilience to him. And even during rounds, I remember the round that, look at Chambers Bay, the final round, after holding that putt in the 16th at Chambers Bay, he had a disaster, of course, in the 17th. The double bogey, he almost threw him out. He thought that was good. He handed the title to Dustin. He threw it away. Then he recovered in the last to get it back.
Yeah.
And he did it again at the old course in St. Andrews in the final day of the Open, where he had that fourth putt on the 8th. Double bogey, that seemed to completely derail his chances of winning. Then he bounced back and made a succession of birdies, not least at one in the 16th, to get back right into contention and tie for the lead. So he has an ability under pressure and tough situations. But I think really what's most exceptional about Spieth, and this is something I wrote about today in a piece I wrote for Golf Chick, is there's really no particular part of his game that stands out from the other.
Right.
People will point to his putting and say, well, that's the best part of his game, that's why he's been successful, and that's fine, and that's understandable, given his ability, particularly for mid-range putting under pressure at the right moments, was incredible last season. But his short putting is suspect, to say the least. But at the same time, that only tells a part of the story, because if success in the game of golf was only about putting, then right now we'd be talking about Aaron Baddeley or Jimmy Walker
right,
as being
sure.
world number one, but we're not. We're talking about Jordan Spieth, because every other aspect of his game was also very strong. He doesn't hit the ball as far as Rory or Dustin Johnson, but he hits it just far enough to compete with them.
Yep.
He's not as good an iron player or a ball striker as Henrik Stenson or Bubba Watson even, but he's good enough to be within touch of them.
No,
and his short game wasn't even as effective last year as Kevin Na's.
Yeah.
But it was still better than most. And his putting is, of course, not the best, but it's better than most others.
Well,
and you bring all that together, he was the only player to be in the top 15 of all strokes gained categories on the PGA Tour stats last season, whether it be driving, accuracy, approach play, and short game and putting. He was the only player to be in the top 15 of all of those things. So the reason one particular part of his game does not necessarily stand out, it's not because they're not good, it's because they're all equally as good as each other. Perhaps that they're not individually great, if you like Rory McIlroy has his driving that's obviously so imperious.
Right.
Spieth does not have that. But overall, he seems to be a more rounded player, and that's why he had the success that he had last year. But at the same time, the question is, being in the top 15 would suggest that he was playing at the absolute limit of his capabilities. He could not really have realistically played any better than he did. And the question for me going forward with him is, if he drops a level, which he will do because you can't play that level all the time, if he drops by 10% this year, how effectively will he still be able to compete with Rory, with Jason Day, with Bubba, those kind of guys? And that's the question mark going forward with Spieth. And that's why it'll be interesting to see how he comes into this season refreshed with new goals to set. And also, you know, you've achieved everything almost. You know, he's no longer a guy who's attempting to break through onto the tour like he was a couple of years ago. He's no longer trying to get into all the majors. He's no longer trying to get on the Ryder Cup team. He's no longer trying to get on to be a first-time PGA Tour winner or win his first major or even become world number one. He's achieved all of these things already at such a young age. So what's going to follow it? You have to really set high standards now and set new goals. He said today, this week at Kapalua, that really he's viewing it as a continuation of last year. He's not really treating it as a new season, but I guess deep down, that makes sense, and it obviously sounds good, but deep down, surely there has to be some sort of period where you think, well, wow, you know, I've done all this. What next?
Well,
that's going to be the real question going forward this year, and that's why I'm really looking forward to tracking his progress throughout the season.
You know, I'm not going to judge every birdie or bogey magnify each event. I'm going to take a more holistic approach to him this year, but I think you're right. He has achieved everything he needs to achieve, including the one thing you left out was finances, and he's pretty much set on that as well. He's set for life. So, the thing about that I love about him is he's a gamer. He doesn't have the personality to get complacent. Now, maybe that changes down the road. Maybe he gets married and he has a family and he starts to have children and that changes things. I don't know. But when you look at him, and like you said, nothing of his game stands out, but yet look what he did over the course of last year. And that's because that's because he's a competitor. That's because he's a gamer, and that's because he wants to win. And that's what I think is it. What's the magic of him is that he does have that hunger, that you know, eye of the tiger, if you so to speak, if you will. And so I think that's what brings his record to life, and the fact that the way he competes. And the other thing, and we talked about mental fortitude and this idea of being able to you know, overcome adversity. And I think Jason Day gets that, you know, sort of when you think about his career. Not I know what Rory I know what Jordan Spieth did last year, and that's a, you know, like you said, almost a Hall of Fame career in itself. You know, year and career, if you will, for the year. But think about what Jason Day has endured through injuries and close calls. And he's also shown, you know, a bit of that resilience and appreciation, you know, of, you know, coming from, and I hate to talk about his background. It's the same way, you know, it's the sort of the thing where, you know, where we, the LPGA player with the scoliosis, I'm blanking out on her name. Stacey Lewis, correct. Thank you. You know, the way we only define her is by her back, and is like, to some degree, is the way they only define Jason Day is by this poor back, you know, this very humbled background, if you will, and obviously non, you know, country club lifestyle, let's put it that way. But he does have that makeup in his, that willing to fight, because he seemed to have not been able to sort of get over the hump or get around the corner of between close calls and then ill-timed injuries, you will. You know, he's proven to be, to show a lot of mettle, so to speak.
Oh, definitely. You know, Jason Day, everything you said there is absolutely right. You know, touching his background, that's, you know, an incredible life story, really. And there was that video, of course, that came out end of last year, detailing his life story, and also wrote a piece for the Players Tribune. He wrote a letter to his 12-year-old self.
Yes,
that was
excellent.
At that age and so on. He was writing back to his 12-year-old self saying, you know, just look at where you're going to be in 16 years' time and what you're going to achieve and how you're going to get there. And you won't believe it. He would not believe it at that age, but he's come on so far. And it is a remarkable life story. It is one of those kind of rags to riches, is kind of the cliche, but it's certainly true in that case. And you're right, even within the season, the context of this, of last year, he came through a lot. You know, as you say, he's had so many near misses in major championships. He's knocked on the door so many times at the Masters and the PGA. He came close at the Masters twice, even, of course, Adam Scott won it. And he overcame that. And but he's always such a good player. You know, he also was so capable. He has a real kind of, he has a rounded skill set. He always has the kind of the ideal game for the modern professional golfer. He's long, he's powerful, he's got a great short game, he's almost got like an extra gear he can go up when required. He's a real athlete in that respect. But he still didn't quite cross the line. And you thought, well, as you say, what happened at the injury he had the year before last, and then also the health scare he had at the US Open with the vertigo. Yeah, that was it's terrifying when he collapsed right at the end of his round, his second round there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he came over that. He overcame that and almost won the U.S. Open. And then, of course, he almost won the Open Championship at St. Andrews. And that was, perhaps for him, it was an even more bitter loss than it was for Spieth, given Spieth had already, of course, won two majors that year. And Day was still seeking his first one. And it was yet another notch on the list of near misses that he had in his career to this point. Then he overcame that, and he won the Canadian Open the following week, and he didn't really look back. You know, winning the PGA the way he did, he just played superbly. You know, the fact that Spieth got within three shots of Jason Day at Whistling Straits was actually incredible, because Jason just played incredibly the whole week. It was one of the best performances we've seen from an individual player in a major for years, around a really long, tough golf course there up in Wisconsin. So to you know, overcome that, and he got that first major, then he carried it on, obviously, into the FedEx Cup, and very nearly won that thing as well. So, you know, obviously, Jordan Spieth has the headlines, has the credibility and the praise and the luster of winning the two majors, and that's perfectly understandable. But at the same time, as you say, Jason Day was not far behind him at all. And again, the questions are for Day. He's had a very quiet sort of winter. He hasn't played much for a while now. He's played very little golf. He's really obviously had a second child as well. only a few weeks ago. So it's again, it's a new era for him going forward. But at the same time, you mentioned there about Jordan Spieth and potentially getting married and having kids in the future and how it will affect his game and his career when his life changes. You know, Jason Day, in a funny old way, his career has got better and better ever since he got married and he had his first son, Dash, and now he's got the daughter to go with it. And it seems that married life and family life almost made Jason Day the player that he's become now. It reminds me a little bit like of Jack Nicklaus. And of course, funnily enough, Jason Day lives in Ohio where Jack came from. So I guess, maybe in a way, Jason Day is obviously not at the level of Jack Nicklaus, but maybe in a sense he almost has similar characteristics that Nicklaus had in terms of being able to be on the course and be a tough competitor. But then away from the course, he's got that balanced life away from it. And I think that helps too.
Sure.
And maybe we look at Tiger Woods, that perhaps wasn't the case with him in his career. Maybe that's why it all fell apart towards the end. But I think Day has that balance, right? Spieth's still a very young man. And Rory, again, Rory McIlroy, he's got engaged again, of course, recently. So maybe he's going to have that balance in his life too as he reaches his late 20s into his 30s. So all these guys have different life stories and different dynamics going on away from the course. And it certainly influences on the course. But I think we have to remember that sometimes change off the course can actually benefit you on the course, and it can't just be a negative influence like some people think it can.
Sure.
So if Day was helped by marriage and kids, maybe those other guys, even Dustin Johnson, obviously now married with Pauline Gretzky, and they have a kid too, so maybe that will help him going forward. So it's, again, but what these guys are all united with is they all have an incredible talent level, and they're all exciting to watch. And we have a place in the game right now where you go back maybe 4 or 5 years ago, in the aftermath of Tiger's scandal and the collapse he had there, people were really fearing, who's going to come up and take the mantle? And no one really did. We had, Angel Cabrera won a major, Stuart Sink won a major, Louis Oosthuizen won a major, all these different guys won majors, Webb Simpson and Jason Duffner and all these guys that really they haven't disappeared, but they haven't really carried on and won more majors. But now we have three young guys here who are obviously from different parts of the world. They're all likable personalities. They're all charismatic in their own way. And they all bring slightly different tools to the table in terms of their game. And that makes for a really compelling thing going forward. But then, of course, you've still got Bubba Watson there, who's just behind them, Ricky Fowler, Dustin Johnson. These guys are still right in the prime of their careers. And you can argue that the three younger guys who are at the top aren't yet at that level in their careers. So it's certainly exciting going forward. But
it's an interesting point.
For Jason Day, obviously, we talk about Jordan Spieth, but Jason Day is not far behind on last year, because his career, his season last year was, and any other year, it would be the best.
Yeah, you bring up an interesting point. And I think, you had mentioned that sort of passing of the torch, so to speak. But I just find it, we sort of forget about the Bubba Watsons and the Brent Snedekers and the Kuchers, who are sort of, in the prime of their careers. If you consider, it seems to be like the 35 to 45 window, if you will, where players have really experienced a lot of growth and success. On some level, we're so quick to pass the torch. And on the other end of that, there's a full crop of players who are willing to sort of hold that notion back a little bit and prove that they still have some stuff to prove as well. And that sort of, because I'm not really big on this. I get the whole idea of this pass the torch, but I sometimes think culture, this fast-paced culture that we live in, produces these types of sentiments and this instant gratification and this sort of idea of what's next that we forget to appreciate. Okay, there's no Tiger Woods, so we have to know what's next. Well, let's appreciate sort of the other group that's still there. Like I said, the Snedekers and the Kuchers and the Bubba Watsons, even whether you like them or not. There's a group of players there that are good for the game as well, if you like that term, so to speak, good for the game. But we shouldn't be so quick to look into the future to ignore the present.
No, I agree with that. I think that's perhaps a symptom of the fact that we have, against the old idea of 24-hour news media, where everything's immediate now, social media, everyone's talking instantly. We're almost in the sense that the narratives are constantly changing, and it almost feels forced and manufactured. And I do agree with that. And I think the idea of calling Spieth, McIlroy, and Day, the new big three, is extremely premature. It really is, because in the end, you know, Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, and Gary Player were the big three, partly because of a real marketing ploy by Mark McCormack back in the early 60s, but also because they won so many majors over a period of 10 years. They dominated the game, literally. And yet, perhaps McIlroy, Day, and Spieth have dominated the last year and a half in majors, but in a year from now, who knows what we'll be talking about? So it's wait and see what happens. Let it develop. Maybe if we're, if the three of them all win a major this year, and maybe we'll start talking about the new big three. But right now, it's certainly premature. But what I do think is certainly true, however, is I do think the PGA Tour and the European Tour, with the men's professional game in particular, is trending younger. And we see that now with the number of winners. Like all the guys, most of the guys who have won on the PGA Tour wraparound season, as they call it, in the end of last year, they were all, most of them were young guys in their 20s. Yeah. And that was a thing replicated throughout the entire season. Obviously, there were some exceptions, not least Davis Love III winning in Greensboro at 51. That was a big exception to the rule. But I do think the game is trending slightly younger. But at the same time, that does not mean that Bubba Watson, who's in his mid to late 30s, cannot go back. I think he's at the game to potentially win another two or three green jackets, because that course just suits him perfectly.
Oh,
he
absolutely
may not do much elsewhere, but I think there he could be almost like a Jack Nicklaus figure, where even into his 40s he actually competes and contends every year at Augusta. He's almost like a Raymond Floyd, maybe, where he seems to always appear at the Masters and really nowhere else.
So I
do think, I agree with you that the narrative is a bit quick and we're a bit premature trying to define eras all the time. I have an obsession with defining things. But I think we just sit back and let it all play out, because in the end, you know, in a year from now, who knows who's going to win majors, who could do anything. You know, where Spieth, Rory, anyone could be, could be an injury or anything. All kinds of things can happen in life, as we all know. So it's I can even remember going back 10 years ago when we had that period where we had Tiger, Phil, and they created the idea of a big five with, with Vijay and Ernie and Retief Goosen in there.
So that was
pretty manufactured as well.
So we
have this, it's a recurring thing in the game where we're always constantly trying to create a new era and define things all the time. But I think in the end, we should just sit back and let it all play out and see how it goes, because, you know, the game, the golf, anything can change. Sport, life, it's all that intangibles. And that's interesting, because who can actually join those guys? Who can break that free up early in the season? It might be Bubba Watson. It might be someone like Ricky Fowler. We might even see a young guy like Justin Thomas, who won, of course, late last year, having a great surge this season, or Brooks Koepka, someone like that. So it's there are all kinds of players who will certainly be trying to jostle themselves and get into that narrative. But I think your point is certainly sound, the idea that we are a bit too quick at times to actually try and define things.
Yeah. Quick question, something that I was thinking about earlier today. Ricky Fowler, is he the anti-Sergio in the sense that pretty much, he hasn't won a major. He has won a Players Championship just like Sergio. Hasn't sort of, will live, obviously, perennially on the best player to not win a major. But I say anti-Sergio in the sense that he has always shown maturity and always shown an appreciation for what he has and where he's been and whatever the case may be. And just a general, I don't want to say love of life, but just sort of, always appreciated, the opportunities. Whereas it seemed like Sergio always seemed to, in the past, although I will say he's much better now, always illustrated a degree of petulance. But yet, career-wise, very similar, but almost the opposites in terms of how the narrative that's been spoken about those two has been shaped.
Yeah, it's I think the difference is, though, you're right about the fact they've both won the Players' Championship. They've both been consistently high-performing players in their mid-20s and so on, like Sergio was 10 years ago. But at the same time, Fowler has yet to, even though he finished in the top five of all the majors the year before last, he has yet to actually really have a chance to win one.
Right.
He wasn't really close in the end to win either any of those four majors. He was miles behind Martin Kaymer. He finished fifth at the Masters. Even when Rory won the Open, he wasn't really in the picture on the back nine. And the same thing happened at the PGA. That was probably the closest one he came to at Valhalla. But even then, he was even four or five holes left. He wasn't really in the mix. When Sergio, on the other hand, has lost majors, Carnoustie in 07, he should have won that. That's, he had that scar tissue from that. And then, of course, when Harrington beat him once again a year later at Oakland Hills in the PGA, in the playoffs. So Sergio had those scars as a player in majors, and that's maybe part of the reason why he hasn't broken through. Mm-hmm. Certainly talent-wise, I think Sergio is a better player than Fowler is at the moment, and it has always been. Right. That's not to say that Fowler can't reach that level in the coming years. But what impresses me most about Fowler is we had this, people were going on for years now, of course, that he hadn't won anything. He was more of a, seemed to be more of a marketing tool than anything else for the companies and the game.
Right.
They're trying to attract young people to it. And certainly that worked. See all the kids with all the orange outfits on in the course. Unfortunately, some middle-aged guys do it as well, and that's not a good look. They're embarrassing.
Yep.
But the kids do it, and that's great. But Fowler, of course, in the past year and a half now, has really added a steely nerve to his game. And look at how well he played in the last four holes at Sawgrass. That was arguably the best finish of the year. It was incredible the way he played those final four holes to win the Players' Championship. And that really silenced all his critics. And then, of course, he won the Scottish Open here down at Gullen. And
sure.
He had that brilliant finish on the 18th, you know, that great shot to the green, the, almost stiff. So, you know, Fowler almost seems like a winner now, not just a guy who's and I rate Ricky Fowler, I think he's fantastic. I think he's a good personality, I think he's a really nice guy, and I think he has a lot of good qualities as a player, particularly the fact that he comes to over here and playing the Open Championship and so on, and he embraces it. He loves the challenge, he loves links golf, he loves the, he can play in a different conditions and difficult weather. And that takes, that is an illustration not just of a very good game, but also someone who has the right mentality. You know, you don't see Bubba coming over here and playing well in bad weather.
Yeah, no.
But you see Ricky Fowler doing it, and
sure.
I think that's important. And so Fowler's someone who he isn't quite at that level as the other three young guys we're talking about in Day, McIlroy, and Spieth, but he's not far off of that. But to get there, he has to win a major championship, and that'll be his main target this year, of course, because he's now got the monkey off his back in terms of winning an event, winning a big event with the Players. He's won internationally now, so the next step for him is to win a major. And again, as you say, even Sergio, he's almost a forgotten man now, but that talent is always there. And who knows, maybe one day, maybe 10 guys in the leaderboard will actually all start dropping shots in the last hole, and he'll come through the back door and win one of these things one of these days. You never know. Who knows? But it's a good observation, though, with Fowler and Sergio, that perhaps it could almost be the equivalent in terms of their careers going forward.
Yeah, I did. There's an eerie, despite the personality difference, it's just the parallel.
Yeah.
That's all. That was my, and the way they've, the way the pressure of those moments have revealed the character of those different players, of those people, I should say.
I think it's important, as I said there, that Ricky Fowler has yet to quite have the same level of pressure as Sergio has in terms of a major. He hasn't quite got to the same last couple of holes with the leader still on.
You're absolutely
hasn't quite
right.
That level. That said, I do think he actually has consistently handled himself very well as a young player over the past 5-6 years since he came onto the scene. Actually, as I say, that's been largely replicated by Rory and Jason Day and Spieth as well. So that's actually a refreshing thing for the game. Is they're not just great players and talented players and good to watch, but they also have the personalities that they're maybe a little bit removed and a little bit, particularly Ricky Fowler, a bit disengaged at times in terms of his talk to the media and so on. But in terms of their personalities, they're certainly likable, and that's obviously a good thing for the game.
Yep. No, it's a fair point. I think you're right. It hasn't been exactly career-wise apples to apples, but something that popped into my head, and I figured I would throw it your way. We're sort of running out of time, or I should say my voice is running out of time, but
I think that's more likely. Your voice is running out.
Yeah, exactly. But let's just turn to the upcoming season, and it's sort of a unique one. But if I said to you, let's say you can only watch one event coming up.
Okay.
You have the Masters, the U.S. Open at Oakmont, the Open at Royal Troon, Ryder Cup at Hazeltine, and the Olympics. So, or I should say the Olympics and the Ryder Cup. You can only watch...
I'm not going to rush out and watch the Olympics, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
But, again, I'm perhaps a little bit different to a lot of people over here in that I have a great affection for the Masters. For me, that was always the event that I watched as a kid growing up on TV late at night over here in the spring, and it was always that beautiful sight of the bright green and the generally speaking, nice weather, and it really brightened up our homes over here. So the Masters, I always look forward to. The golf course, I think it's somewhat lost its way in the past sort of 10, 15 years, but it still creates drama. You know, it's a very exciting course to watch. There's so much. It's a course where it's almost the great gambler's course where anything can go right and everything can go wrong.
Yeah.
There's also that chance for greatness and also disaster, and that's really exciting to watch. And the other majors as well, the U.S. Open going to Oakmont, which of course is one of the classic American courses, but at the same time, if it's anything like it was back in 07 when it was just completely covered in rough and the course was just essentially vandalized, really, as a course should never play like that, because you look at the bunkers and the rough should never be, the bunkers should never be in the middle of the rough. That's supposed to be fairway bunkers for a reason. The ball should be able to run into them. Yeah. And that wasn't the case at Oakmont last time. And that was really kind of the U.S. Open at its worst and most one-dimensional. So I hope Oakmont, they set it a bit better this time and less penal in terms of the rough and make it a bit more wider, a bit more expansive, a bit more interesting. It's
yeah.
obviously a great golf course. Royal Troon is perhaps one of the more unfashionable courses for the Open. It's not one that we all kind of tick at the top of the list, but it's certainly a good, solid course. And obviously, links golf is stuff we don't see enough of, really, and it's always compelling because it's unique and it's different. It tests the players in ways that they aren't normally done so. And again, that's the frustration I think you have as well with me, is that the game regularly, most weeks, is watching the same tournament time and time again. The courses
yeah.
all look the same and play the same.
Yeah,
Sorry, there you go.
Oh, yeah, no, I was just going to say I agree with you there, and I agree with you, with the exception of the Masters is usually my favorite. I would say if I had one to watch in this particular case, this particular year, I would say that it would be for me the Ryder Cup. I don't have, like yourself, the Olympics, other than maybe just to see the course. I don't like the way it's set up. I'm not even going to go there. I know there are politics involved and whatever the case may be. I just... The idea of the way they're going to, the format of it, it's been killed, so I'm not going to beat a dead horse. The Masters would be my number one, but this is a Ryder Cup year, and since we only get it every other year, I have to go with the Ryder Cup, especially after the drama of last Ryder Cup and the sort of recent history and wondering when the United States was going to get back over the hump there and get a W. You know, normally if it was a normal year, I would agree with you. In the Masters is always my first love in terms of the first tournament of the year, the coming of spring, the history, and yada yada yada. All for, you know, it ticks all the boxes. But in this particular case, the Ryder Cup just gets the edge, given the fact that it's a drama-filled event that doesn't happen every year, and we have to wait another year.
Well, incidentally, I noticed that it was Paul Azinger's birthday today, of course, the one and only Ryder Cup captain for America to actually win the competition this millennium, if you like, since the year 2000. So,
yeah, the apparent European kryptonite.
The Americans are due a victory this year. and it will be compelling because I think they've got a very good team, obviously, in terms of the players they have at the top. Who knows where they'll be in September, but... I think I was someone who actually approved of the appointment of a reappointment even of Davis Love as the captain. I think that's probably quite a smart idea.
Yeah.
He was very unlucky at Medina, of course, lost to a miracle in other words, almost really in sporting terms. So I think they've got a very good chance this year, the Americans. And even see, I noticed Justin Thomas was on TV the other day talking about, they asked him, well, would you want to win a major or be on a winning Ryder Cup team? And he said, Ryder Cup. So
yes.
I think the American players, now young guys in particular, are really fired up. And now we're seeing less of those American players like Tiger, like Phil, like Furyk, Stricker, those kind of guys who almost had, they were constantly beaten. There was scar tissue there from essentially a decade of losses and occasionally heavy losses. And all these young guys now probably watched that on TV back in the day and thought, you know, well, that's frustrating. I want to go up there and you know, get the title, get the trophy back for America. And so I think they'll have a very strong team. That said, the Europeans, although they may seem right now to be the underdogs in terms of the guys who are playing well or not playing well, at the same time, the Europeans always seem to put together a really strong team no matter what. They all seem to come together and play well. So it should be a really interesting competition. And I noticed that Darren Clark the other week tweeted somewhat oddly that he thinks the Americans are favourites. Perhaps that's part of the psychological mind games that have already begun. I don't know. But certainly, it's a great showpiece. In a funny old way, it comes after the Olympics, of course, and maybe the Ryder Cup will show us why the Olympic Games should have also been match play.
Yep, absolutely. Well, that's all. That's about all the time we have, or I have, for the for this little On Par Winter podcast. And Kieran, always a pleasure to talk to you. We'll be doing this again.
I look forward to it.
It's
been great fun.
Yeah, we'll be doing this on a regular basis, and look forward to reading your stuff at golfshake.com and seeing you on Twitter at Kieran Clark. And so appreciate your time, and enjoy the views and the vistas on your TV of sun, beautiful Kapalua. And
I can't wait.
I'm sure you'll be in agony as much as the rest of us, just
definitely
chomping at the bit to get back out into the golf season. Thank you, Kieran.
Okay, pleasure, Anthony. Thank you.
Take care. All right, folks, that's it for the On Par Winter podcast. Thank you for joining me and Kieran. And look forward to talking with Kieran more in the future. So if you have some interesting topics, maybe give us a shot at Scorcher On Par on Twitter and or at Kieran Clark. Let us know if there's something you want us to address. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorcher. Enjoy.